Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Media wants to bash you for the past, for some of the marital issues of the past. But yet, when I talk to evangelicals, they're like, you know what, been there, done that regarding forgiveness. And that is very important. What does that say to you, the sentiment of forgiveness from evangelicals?
Well, I think it's important. I think it's also important that they recognize that I have not hidden from the facts of my life, that I have
confessed. All right, take a walk. Go back to lobbying. Okay, let me have some music, then we'll get on with the show already.
Because I found don't hear anymore. My thrill.
Apparently he found it over and over again. He found this thrill. This guy has so many blueberries on his knees.
Old Blueberry Hill.
Obama has so many blueberry stains on his pants that he's not qualified to run for the presidency. But look, don't tell that to him. Now, I want to ask you something. You've got a president who is so imperious and so out of touch with reality that he says whether or not Congress acts, he's going to raise taxes on the American people through executive order, right? This is a president now. He's going to go around Congress once again, do what he wants, raise taxes. How far can this group go in miscalculating not only the American people, but the world at large? As you well know, it was Carter, Brzezinski, Hillary Clinton, and Obama, with Soros' backing, who unleashed the unholy mobs in Egypt and across the Arab Crescent. And to this day, they continue to lie to themselves and others and call it an Arab Spring, when I was the first in the media to call it what it is, which is an Arab winter, and worse. Today, we learn that Egypt will not let 10 Americans and Europeans from leaving that hellhole, including the son of U.S. Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood. They said, you cannot leave this country. Now, this did not occur when Mubarak was president. It is occurring when these Islamic maniacs have taken over Egypt with the backing of America. And what's even worse is Hillary Clinton says we're going to fast-track aid to these Islamists who are running Egypt. Where is the connection between reality and this government, I'd like to know? All right, that's one question. And why don't any of the Republican candidates for president talk about the miscalculation of the Arab Spring? What's wrong with them? Why don't any of the Republican candidates for president talk about marriage and family values? What's wrong with them? Why don't any of the Republican candidates call off these debates and say, no more, we've had it, let's go to the primaries? I don't know what's the matter with them. I have no idea. I don't know how to explain it to you. So we have many things that concern us as Americans, and we're all worried about it. The fact of the matter is, there are other stories as well. Finally, a woman, an uppity woman, stood up to the commander-in-chief, Governor Brewer, dare stand up to Obama at an airport. Now, you'd think the feminists would be cheering. You'd think all of the women who've been screaming for women's liberation and the assertion of women's rights would be cheering and rallying behind her. But no, because she dared stand up to their icon, the Prophet Obama. And so she stood up to him, and her book is going through the roof because people are trying to see what's in it. What did she say about Obama? Why is he so thin-skinned? I mean, that's part of the territory of being a public figure, right? Many stories to talk about. Many stories to talk about. That's a big story. Now, I realize that I do not have another cruise ship to report as turned over for your salacious entertainment. I realize that attracted the world's attention for about 48 to 72 hours. Because after all, I mean, that was pretty dramatic. Lots of people died. It was a dramatic story, and the salacious news audience around the world needs cruise ships to turn over on a daily basis in order to keep them tuned into the media. But unfortunately, I do not have such a tragedy to report to you, so we'll have to stick to little things such as a president growing increasingly imperious, look up the word, It's actually a nice word. It really means minor tyrant, imperiousness. He thinks it's an imperial dynasty that he inherited rather than a presidency that he ran for, okay? If you care to talk about any of these topics, you're crazier than I am. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. Obama Brewer Tiff fires up cyberspace. Obama Brewer Tiff? You mean no one's allowed to criticize the president? Via Twitter and Google, some readers take the president's side and condemn Brewer, an evil Republican, with many, many readers citing Arizona's immigration law. Others back Brewer and say the president was rude. Which side do you take? Which side do you take, for the uppity woman or for the good-looking, tall president who nobody is there has dared to criticize? Here's what one of the readers said. Pointing your finger in the face of the president of the United States is very disrespectful. I would expect the governor to conduct herself with more decorum than that. Jeff Morris says, I seem to recall the left media cheering when someone threw a shoe at W. Cindy Shahan, etc. Another one says, Governor Brewer is obviously unable to comport herself in a way befitting the governor of any state. Comport might be... What do you mean comport? I say good for you, Governor Brewer, and shame on you, Barack Obama. The president has to realize that he is not a dictator, and people can and will disagree with him in his views. Thank God there's a woman in this country not afraid of that dictator. Another one writes, I've never had a problem with the color of the president's skin. My problem is with the thinness of it. Whoa! That's from a man by the name of Tim Irwin. He says he works for the Department of Labor. He said, I've never had a problem with the color of the president's skin. My problem is with the thinness of it. Look at the video. Kind of looks like he's lecturing, huh? Patronizing, wouldn't you say? Another one says, you need to respect the office, regardless if you respect the man. How come you didn't say that when Bush was president, you lying, double-talking, liberal, Prius-driving phonies, you? You mean it's a one-way street with you? Unbelievable. This is all about illegal immigrants. This is all about Obama catering to Mexico and illegal Mexicans. And this is about Brewer representing the voters of the state of Arizona. End of story. Another big story that you haven't heard about. I know it's not that important, but Barney Frank is marrying his long-term live-in lover. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. They're going to be married now that he's left office. He is going to walk down the aisle. I will not be officiating at that particular marriage. I've not been asked, I must be honest. But the fact of the matter is, I am not officiating at Barney Frank's wedding. 1-800-449-825. What is it they're calling about? The lines are like red, and there's one call up. So how much more do I have to say till I take a call now? All right, Paul in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Mr. Savage. How are you, sir? My point that you want to get across really quick. I was looking on the Internet, and Bernanke wants to lower rates, and they want to keep the rates low. They can't sell houses at this point because, you know, everybody's in a foreclosure mode. And I think this is a scheme by the rich elites. The people like Soros...
Look, you're speaking kind of in a way... I can see already you don't know much about finance. First of all, your news is 3 months old. Houses are selling. I don't know if you know this. But forget the word rich and elites already. People are jumping and buying houses again. Did you know that?
Honestly, they showed the biggest...
I mean, I realize in the Rikers Correctional Institution, you wouldn't know much about the housing market. And they give you the quarter to make the call every day at this time. So you come up with rich elites conspiring against... Come on. John in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation from WOR. Go ahead, please.
It's wrong for anyone to stick their finger in anyone's face. And because...
Well, I think it's wrong for a president to stick his nose into the affairs of a state when they're trying to protect themselves from an influx of illegal aliens, wouldn't you?
It's the way you conduct yourself in a conversation.
Also, what if the man doesn't listen? What if he walks around like he's God Almighty and doesn't hear a word anyone says?
Well, that's ridiculous because sticking a finger in his face isn't going to work any better, and it's only going to make your...
Well, but she got the attention of you and the world. We finally are all asking, what is it that he's so afraid of that's in her letter?
No, she didn't get the attention of me. She got...
He did. The world's talking about Governor Brewer daring to stand up to the imperious president. You know what? It's over. It's over the illegal alien issue. She's trying to protect her citizens from the onslaught of illegal aliens and the fact that they're draining the state treasury. And Obama, as you well know, is the candidate who the illegal aliens love.
Yeah, but this isn't going to make her opinion or her cause any better. It makes her look like a menstrual lunatic.
Well, now you're getting misogynist, so I see where you're coming from. You hate women.
No, I don't hate women.
When exactly did your wife leave you? Was it within the last 5 years or in the last 10?
Now you're being funny, but it
okay, at least we're laughing. We don't have to be mad at each other. No. So what should she have done, curtsy and bow?
No, it's not one or the other. She should have just...
I mean, what, she should have gotten a kilt and made believe he was the Prince Andrew visiting? Come on. She's trying to get the guy's attention. He wouldn't listen to her. You see this guy's head's always up in the air. His back is always straight up. He doesn't listen to anybody.
No, you're right. He has his point of view, but I'm not saying he's right. I'm saying, look, honey more than vinegar. It's simple as that. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, so what should she have done when the imperious president arrived in her state after he's attacked her over and over again?
Make your point, but you're not going to get anywhere by sticking your finger in it.
But how? Okay, so you've made your point. So what should she have done?
I don't know. I don't know what the conversation was. I mean, were there two people talking at a tarmac?
But what is it that he... But what is it that you would have had her do in terms of protocol? You're offended that she stick her finger up, basically pointed at him like he, and no one could do that because he's a deity. Where is it written you can't lift a finger to emphasize your point?
No,
Italians do it. Greeks do it. Jews do it. Mediterraneans use their hands to gesticulate. I don't know her ethnic background, but she was just gesticulating.
From the picture, it looks like she's sticking, like saying... How...
I realize it's not protocol for British royalty to have a finger, you know, when you're talking to them. You have to sit there. But for a president, a man allegedly who's for the little guy, he should understand what a finger and a hand talk gestures. But let's stop talking in circles. What do you think the tiff is over?
The tiff, she's not happy. No, she's a little paranoid. Wasn't she mad that they took her cell phone in the Oval Office? That's not even a rational person that thinks like that. They always
see. But you're going around the big issue on purpose in order to throw mud in the water. What is it that is contentious between the president of the United States and the governor of Arizona on a big scale?
Well, I don't know. What did you just say?
All right, take a walk. You're just trying to trip me up. You work for the Obama administration. The fact is that Obama is overriding the state of Arizona with regard to their desire to defend themselves against the onslaught of illegal aliens, the drug gangs, the sucking of the social services, and the people themselves voted to give the police the permission to detain and to investigate gangbangers in Arizona, and they said that was racist. This is a major league battle. The president is on the wrong side of America, the wrong side of the law. And here we have a woman with the guts to stand up to him, unlike all of the Republicans put together. I'm on her side. I'll be back.
Savage.
I started off talking about jobs and the economy and the Arizona comeback and what a great job we have done here in Arizona. We are leading the nation. And he changed the subject to my book. And I asked him, I said, did you read my book? And he said, I read excerpts. And then he started down his dialogue of what he felt. And I stood there.
All right, so the thin-skinned president took the time out from a photo op to try to browbeat a woman, and instead of all women of both parties standing behind her, the partisan attacks begin on Jan Brewer, who has the nerve to stand up to this imperious president, unlike any of the men in the opposition party who are quaking in their boots. Here are some other headlines on the Savage Nation. Pentagon says the Army and the Marines will be shrunk because Obama wants to shrink the Army and Marines. Why is investment income taxed less than wages? Egypt bans travel for U.S. official's son and 9 others, locking them in the hellhole. No energy industry backing for the war. Well, you don't know what that means. Let's go to the next one. This is a very big story, which is that Soros will benefit from Obama's latest shenanigans. It seems this president responds only to zillionaires' concerns, such as Warren Buffett, George Soros, the owners of Microsoft and others. Whatever they say, he seems to do for them. I mean, that's not new in politics, but the level of complicity between big business and the presidency, I think, is at a new level. All the while, he continues to get away with the saying he's for the little guy. It's amazing to me. 1-800-449-8255. Demi Moore released from hospital. That should really interest you. Sought emergency treatment following a seizure-like crisis at home. Some say it was drug-related. Others say they don't know. Others say, what are you kidding? Who cares? Who cares? Who cares? You go on these websites, you get sidetracked by Hollywood starlets. Hollywood starlets. Off-duty NYPD cop shoots and kills a man over a carjacking. Obama losing support from Florida's Hispanic voters. Hispanic voters' support for Obama drops as Gopper's Romney and Gingrich spar over immigration in Florida. That's bad news for the president, who won 67% of the Hispanic vote nationwide in 2008. I guess you can fool some of the people some of the time and some of the people all of the time, but you can't fool all of the people all of the time. Even minorities occasionally are capable of independent thinking when it comes to a president who continues to tell them one thing and do another. Only 46% of Hispanic voters in Florida support Obama. Look how they call him the commander-in-chief for re-election. What a biased report. Look at this. This is from a newspaper in the Daily News, the commander-in-chief. How about the president? Against an unnamed Republican opponent compared to 57% when Obama ran 4 years ago. That's a big drop. I wonder why it's dropping. Well, I guess he hasn't delivered on his 08 promises. On the economy, number one. And number two, he hasn't yet granted amnesty to enough illegal aliens, only a few hundred thousand. So therefore, that's a big problem. But remember, the Cuban-American community is an anomaly amongst Hispanic-American communities in America. It's not like the others in many ways. You've got Puerto Ricans, who are the second largest group among Florida Latinos, where Romney has a small lead over Gingrich, 22 to 12%. While Romney has strong support among Cuban Americans, leading Gingrich 49 to 17%, because Cuban Americans know what communism is and they know what a liar is. You see what I'm saying? 20% are undecided, leaving some hope for whoever. So, we're on a break already? The bottom of the hour clock is broken again.
Savage. For all things news and talk radio, visit trncentral.com.
I refuse to watch another debate tonight. It's an embarrassment to put up with this anymore. Even slow-footed McCain has come out and said, stop it. Stop it already. The only one benefiting is Obama. But who said it first? Old Doc Savage. Old Doc Savage said they're committing Harry Caray 4 months ago, 3 months ago, 2 months ago. They don't get it. They don't understand how out of touch they are with reality. They're boosting Obama through the roof. The man should have been the most easily defeated president in history for a number of reasons. One, the corruption. Two, the cronyism. Three, the failure to improve the economy. Four, the fact of the matter is he's extremely unpopular amongst taxpayers, let alone the illegal aliens, is another story. This is a president that represents several constituencies, and it is not mainstream constituencies that I am referring to. They are not mainstream constituencies. This president fundamentally represents, in many ways, the illegal alien community, the immigrant community, the minority community, the government and state worker community, and that's probably the primary constituencies or demographics of this president. He should have been easily defeated for what he's done, but the Republicans continue to chop each other to pieces. And it's very, very worrisome right now to see a man who was in such trouble as near as a few months ago rising in the polls. So we're focusing now on Obama's crude behavior in taking umbrage with Governor Jan Brewer daring to stand up to him when he tried to chew her out for something she wrote about him in her book. Apparently, he doesn't think that this is a free country and that people are not entitled to free opinions. Sacramento, Jerry, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please. Your opinion counts.
Well, I would like to thank you for backing her up, because I've listened to this all day long, and there hasn't been one person that came out to back her up, and she has every right to speak.
Wait, I don't believe it. You're telling me even so-called conservative talk show hosts are backing Obama?
No, they're not backing Obama, and they're just laughing it off. They're not coming out and saying that they're backing her. And it's really aggravating.
Well, why not back her? The woman just simply said, wait a minute. Why don't you listen to me? First of all, where does he come off saying to a governor who wrote a book that she has no right to criticize him? I don't understand it. How could anyone not see what this is?
Well, why don't he try to run Arizona for a while and see what she's going through? Maybe he would listen then.
Oh, he knows what she's going through. He wants to dissolve the borders with Mexico. That's what him and the Justice Department are working on. Any state that stands up to the illegal alien mobs gets rolled over by the tyrannical Obama administration. 1-800-449-8255. We have many callers, many topics. Leela in New York on WOR. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Mike.
Yes.
Honored to talk to you. Are you there?
Yes, talk.
Oh, my goodness. I'm fainting over here. You have no idea. I wanted to talk to you about Jan Brewer. She's the only one that has courage to stand up to this dictator. And I know she's trying to defend the citizens of Arizona.
Yeah.
Get these illegals out of there.
Yeah.
And I love her to death. And I want to say this.
Look, here's the thing. Whether or not you agree with her politics, I do, by the way. I'm on record with that. Why is the president so thin-skinned that he can't take criticism from a woman governor in public? His own ego and narcissism overrode his common sense.
Yes, I agree.
He should not have taken umbrage, even if he did so internally. It just shows you that he's not used to anyone saying a word to him that he doesn't want to hear.
Well, I have to tell you, Mike, my husband and I just adore you. We've been listening to you for years. My son is listening to you. He's got one of your books. They love you. And I just want to say that this is not a president. He is not my president. He is not a leader of the country.
You know, that's what bothers me, is that I remember when Bush was president, the radical liberal anti-American slime rode around with bumper stickers saying he is not my president. Why can't we put out bumper stickers saying, oh, bummer, or he's not my president, or, you know, why? When we're not allowed to show any disrespect? Why? What, is he in a class by himself?
Yes, he thinks he is.
He is the most divisive president in American history since Abraham Lincoln.
I agree.
Thanks for the call. No, honestly, that's what it is. It's not funny. Look, let's be clear. I don't want to go through the whole litany because you know it's true and you've heard it. If he wins again, all bets are off as to whether this country will survive as a free nation. It's interesting. You know that in April I have a book coming out called Trickle Down Tyranny, right? But what you don't know is the subtitle of the book, which I've been altering almost on a minute-by-minute basis right until they go to the printer with it. And I changed it this morning. I wish I had it in front of me. I don't want to get it. Oh, here it is. Hold on. Hold on. It's not even up on the site for you to buy it yet, so I don't think I'm selling you. Trickle Down Tyranny, Crushing Obama's Dream of a Divided – it's actually the Socialist States of America. Crushing Obama's Dream of the Socialist States of America, or a Socialist States of America. Will we remain the U.S. of A, or will we become the USS of A, the United Soviet States of America? Listen to what I just said to you. Many ex-Soviet citizens see a remarkable movement that is retrograde, moving backwards from freedom to tyranny, from the U.S. of A, the greatest country the world has ever seen, into something else. And we don't know what his model is for this transformation. Remember, he kept saying he wants to be a transformational president. What does that mean, transformational? That's way beyond progressive president. Transformational. So we don't know whether his model of transformation resides in Paris or in Beijing. We don't know whether his model for a transformed America is that of Washington, D.C., or Damascus, Syria. We have no idea what he means by transformational, but many of us have a deep fear in our gut that it's not good. We fear this man because we don't sense he really cares about individual rights and individual freedoms. And he certainly has shown it today with the interaction with a brave female governor, woman, who stood up to him. And he said, how dare you? How dare you point your finger at me and say anything about me in your book? I am Obama, the master of all. You're just a mere fleck, a mere governor. Who do you think you are? Do you understand the ramifications of this interchange are actually quite global? This is the gesture seen around the world. This is a gesture, if properly handled by any of the Republican candidates, could launch them way over the top. Unfortunately, they're being advised by, I think, fairly dim, doctrinaire, heavily programmed individuals who don't really understand what's going on in this country. They're so deeply involved in hating each other and attacking each other, each other's candidacy. They don't even see what Obama's doing. So I think we've covered that. Unless you want to talk about it. Many of you saying about time somebody stood up. Obama, you want me to read what some of the people are saying? I don't think I should read what other people are saying. I'll let them talk for themselves. Nancy in New York wants to talk about the debates. Nancy, go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I agree with you about Governor Brewer, but I happen to think that it's a good idea that the Republicans have all these debates so they can hash it out and attack each other, because the Democrats are going to be doing that to them in the campaign.
However, why is it then that Obama's ratings have gone up while a generic Republican candidate has gone down as they continue to rip each other apart and as Gingrich in particular continues to rip Romney down?
Yeah, well, everybody likes to make fun of the Republicans, all of the news media, and I think that boosts Obama's, increase in the polls, but I don't necessarily...
Well, you see, so that's what I'm saying. All of this attention on Gingrich's attacks on Romney in particular have benefited only one person, and that's Obama. In fact, it should be an Obama presidency with Gingrich running as the vice presidential candidate as a Democrat, because he certainly will have earned the vice presidential slot. He's done more for Obama than has Biden in this last 60-day cycle. It should be an Obama slash Gingrich ticket. There's no question about it. I see that in Brooklyn, New York, there's a problem going on. Religious Jews versus short-skirted hipsters in Crown Heights, Brooklyn. Religious Jews are upset at their new young neighbors for everything from women wearing shorts, bar hopping, and sunbathing. Let's see. Stop these yuppies from bringing your modesty to our neighborhood. It's a clash of different cultures, they're saying. Young people are coming into the neighborhood, suntanning on rooftops, bike lanes, and an increasing amount of immodesty on our streets. Well, you know, it's an interesting argument. This area of Brooklyn, the corner of Kingston Avenue and Eastern Parkway, is the home base of the Chabad-Lubavitch movement. And they're extremely modest and extremely religious. And they're entitled to be so in a free country. But so are the women. The question is, why must the women do this in their neighborhood? Why would they move to a neighborhood like that and purposely walk around and offend religious people? Why must they do this? Why don't they go somewhere where they can be who they are without judging them? Okay? It's their neighborhood more than mine, said one of the sluts. She says, but everyone should be able to dress how they want to dress. Okay, well, you know, it's an interesting question. The rabbis say religious Jews don't want their children to see too much skin as newcomers flood the neighborhood. It's a very intriguing clash because it's gone on in Israel for a very long time, in Jerusalem in particular. Another story out of New York that's attracted my attention. The police commissioner, Mr. Kelly, who's a distinguished individual and a fabulous police commissioner, has a son who was 9 years a Marine pilot. 9 years a Marine Air Force pilot. Then he was on one of the TV networks. Now, the story is that he went to a woman and he run into each other in the street months ago. She invites him back to her law office. We don't know whether she's a legal aide, paralegal, or a lawyer. She invites Kelly back to her law office after hours. She claims now, months later, he raped her. Can you believe this? Now she's claiming that she was pregnant from the rape and that she had to abort the baby. You know, this is getting crazy that lawyers are allowed to make these stories up. This is crazy. It's just insane what's going on in the world because of the out-of-control legal mob. It may as well be a gang with laptops instead of machine guns. The laptop is a far more dangerous item in the hands of American lawyers of the American Bar Association than our AK-47s in the hands of gangs in this country. Because with one laptop, you can destroy an entire nation. Look what's going on in this country. Houston, Texas. Dave, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Good evening, Dr. Savage.
Go ahead, please. Yes, I can hear you. Please speak.
Okay. This is the time that I am reminded of when you said that only the women of this country can save this nation.
Only the women. I did predict that it would be women who might save the nation.
And this is, I think, a mother talking to a small child, telling, putting him in place, basically saying no means no.
Well, that's why he didn't like it. Obama's not used to anyone criticizing him, advising him even, or saying anything that he doesn't want to hear.
Yes, and thank you for taking my call. I come from a different country, but I'm kind of seeing this. I've been seeing this for 6 years now, that he's running, trying to run this like, you know, like you say, a third world dictatorship. Nobody.
Where are you originally from? India, perhaps?
Yes, sir.
Wonderful people. The greatest contribute. I should say they. The Indian people come to this country and contribute so many things, and in such a powerful way. They don't set off bombs. The Hindus don't set off bombs. They don't run around with a flag saying "I hate America." They don't have posters saying "We'll introduce Sharia law." It's astounding the difference between the Hindus of India and your neighbors.
Well, it is a fact.
You know, I mean, I noticed that. I mean, I can't help but noticing that. Why can't I notice it? What should I say? All immigrant groups are the same? They are clearly not. God bless the people from India. Now, here's a shocking story. Liam Neeson, fabulous actor. He's converting to Islam. The Irish actor, raised a Catholic and once an altar boy, says that Islam got into his spirit while he was making a film in Turkey. You mark my words. I said something else a few years ago. I said the next trend in Hollywood amongst the know-nothing, empty-headed drug addicts is going to suddenly be taking on the piousness of Islam in order to make it a political statement, in order to make it a sort of take it upon themselves as they suddenly they go from the most degenerate, all of a sudden they walk around in burqas in Hollywood. The Irish actor admitted to the UK Sun newspaper that he's considering giving up his Catholic beliefs in order to become Muslim. Went to explain the Islamic prayer got into his spirit when he was working on the action thriller Taken 2. Well, what this dolt doesn't know is that the action thriller Taken 2 cannot even be shown in most Muslim nations, this moron. It just shows you how stupid actors really are. It just shows you how stupid these entertainers are. I mean, he could practice any religion he likes. Certainly, he could become a Muslim and not become an extremist. We understand that as well. But what is he talking about Islam in the middle of promoting three movies for? What's that all about? Why is it that so many liberals want to join Islam and communism? Can you believe this? It's beyond belief. First, they promote communism, and now they promote Islam. What is it about these people? What is it about these people? I suggest that Liam Neeson go live in Syria for a few years, or better yet, let him live in Egypt for a few years and see how they treat film actors who lead his lifestyle. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Welcome back for this Thursday's edition. As a postscript to what I just said about religion, I've got to add a line, and this is this. You know, I don't care what the principal religion is. In a world gone mad with sex, drugs, and all conceivable deviances, which are held up as norms, only the principal religious traditions can save the souls of ourselves. Okay? It's as simple as that. Christians, Jews, Hindus, Muslims, Buddhists, we'll understand what I just said. In a world gone mad with sex, drugs, and all conceivable deviances that are held up as norms, only the principal religious traditions can save the souls of ourselves. That's my position. That's what I believe. That's my faith. Am I perfect? No, I'm a man. Am I acting as though I'm above you? No. I'm flawed. I'm a flawed man just like you are. The world's great religions have stood the test of time. Because they're all great. They all share a belief in God. And they all have traditions that are passed on from generation to generation. Now, whether you truly sense God in the tradition that was passed on to you is another story. And many of you don't feel God in your tradition. Many of you are lapsed Jews, lapsed Catholics in particular. And you have wandered and gone to Buddhism, for example, and never found anything there either. You sat on your behind and you did the chanting and bent this and that. You try to feel something there. You felt nothing anyway. There was still a void. There was still a void. And many of you have given up on religion altogether. And I'm not here to tell you to go find it again. That's for you to worry about. So you turn to everything else. God knows. Hedonism. You name it. And what do you feel really at the end of the day? It's up to the individual. There's too many people for me to generalize. And so I have to, therefore, at a certain point, talk only about my quest, my road, my hegira, so to speak. I've been on a long road, and I've been in many parts of the world, many strange parts of the world, Tonga, Fiji, Samoa, the Marquesas. I've been to the Middle East, Japan, the hills of Marin. I've been in many, many other places. And have I found God? I don't know. Has God found me? That's what I'm worried about now that where I found him. That would make me the center of the quest. It's whether God has found me. That's all I'm worried about. I don't want to die without God knowing me. I'll be very honest with you. I look back at the body of work I've created, and it's pretty vast. I'm a very prolific individual. I'm going through all of my old writings now because a couple of my publishers are clamoring for my earlier work. And it's a treasure trove I found in some of the storage. I thought I had lost them, then I thought I found them, then they were lost. And I sent them, and they really loved them. They've gone crazy for a lot of these writings. And I keep asking myself, what has driven me since I'm 17 years old to have written all these books and done all these travels and do a daily radio show when most men who are at a certain point who have the means don't work anymore? I'm not saying that they expect me to play golf, but what drives me? And I remember when I was a kid, 17, 16, looking for the reason to live, or what the reason for living is, I remember thinking that every man must make his mark, his notch on earth while he's here. And I said, well, what does that really mean? What does that mean? What do you mean make your mark so you'll be noticed by God, not by man? You see, I think we only get a piece of the picture. We think that we're doing it for the ego recognition on this earth. But in a way, I think we're really writing prayers to the Creator, is what I've come to. Anyway, just a random thought about religion from one man. We'll get back to regular programming in a moment. I don't mean to offend those of you who find religion offensive.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Wants to bash you for the past, for some of the marital issues of the past. But yet, when I talk to evangelicals, they're like, you know what, been there, done that regarding forgiveness. And that is very important. What does that say to you, the sentiment of forgiveness from evangelicals?
Well, I think most people can identify, either with themselves or with friends or with loved ones, that life has moments that are very sad that you wish weren't occurring. Mm-hmm. I think in that sense, it may make me more normal than somebody who wanders around seeming perfect.
I found my thrill.
Blueberry Hill. So Newt Gingrich says affairs make him more normal than Mitt, who only has sex with his wife. That's why we're playing Blueberry Hill right now, because apparently, you know, there's a metaphor about Pinocchio's nose. I would say that Newt Gingrich has more blueberry stains on his pants than anybody in politics. And he says that that makes him more normal. You hear? I mean, Gingrich's pants are clean, and his are stained with blueberries. What am I going to tell you? Welcome back to the Savage Nation. What people are really talking about are not blueberries on Newt's trousers, but Jan Brewer standing up to the imperious president who was so thin-skinned that he did not like what she wrote about him in her book, and he dared use a public forum to try and dress her down, which was a big mistake and an example of this man's thin-skinnedness. I believe, in my opinion. I have an article here that we just posted on michaelsavage.com. An elephant is fitted with a contact lens. A vet performed the procedure at a Dutch zoo. You hear this? An injured elephant got her sight back Wednesday when she was fitted with a jumbo-sized contact lens. I only wish that the Republicans would get their sight back. And perhaps there's a vet smart enough to insert a contact lens in the eye of the Republican elephant. No, I mean, it's unbelievable to me. What, do they not see what's going on around them? The elephant's 44 years old in Amsterdam and accidentally scratched her cornea while playing with a pal. When zoo officials realized she couldn't open her eye without pain, they brought in veterinarian Anna-Marie Verbruggen. And so Verbruggen, who had fitted contact lenses to horses before, but never elephants, spent weeks training with Wynn Theta, according to the Irish Times. When it was time to insert the lens, she climbed up a ladder to get close to the animal's eyes. It's an astonishingly beautiful story. It's a miracle, actually. It's a blessing and a miracle. I mean, this is biblically beautiful. The picture that we have here, I cannot believe how beautiful. I'd like to save this picture. The elephant's smiling. They're so beautiful. The animals are so beautiful. And the vet is a saint. But there's a metaphor for it. The Republican elephant could use a vet such as she to put in a new contact lens because apparently they're banging into the walls. I got to listen to another debate tonight? It's astounding to me. 1-800-449-8255. There's nothing you could say that's better than what I just said, which is why it's my show. That's not an arrogant statement. It means I'm going to pause before I take another caller or two. Normally people use callers to catch a breath, but I don't want to just use you in that manner. There are many other stories, by the way. There's a lot of other stories, and I don't know which ones you want to talk about. Mom arrested after leaving 5-year-old son to gamble at a casino. That's unusual in America. It's not so unusual. Demi Moore case spotlights danger of nitrous oxide. What? You're blaming it on poppers now? Wait a minute. Whippets, the high you can buy at Walmart. While most people use nitrous oxide canisters to make whipped cream, parties inhale them for a brief euphoric high. Reports that actress Demi Moore hospitalized earlier this week for a seizure and shaking had inhaled the gas may spur more people to try the cheap buzz. Oh, I shouldn't even talk about it. They're selling this now in a... Oh, it's for whipped cream. This is what the idiots in Hollywood support Obama are using now as their drug of choice, and they criticize alcohol? Hey, I'll take a beer over a nitrous oxide capsule. It's unbelievable. This is what they're getting high on? I'm sure it was a little mixture there. I'm sure it wasn't just the canister. I'm not going to ask you what it feels like to inhale poppers. I'd be lying to you if I said I never did it as a teenager. I did it as a teenager. It was horrible. I did. I remember it with the idiot friends I hung around with. None of them amounted to anything. One became a busted suitcase of a lawyer. Can't get arrested. Can't get himself arrested. Another one. I don't want to knock them. God bless. They're nice kids. But, you know, the drugs ruined every aspect of society, every element of society. You don't know whether to legalize, illegalize, decriminalize, kill the drug dealers, hang them in public squares, really get serious, liberalize, criminalize. No one knows what to do. No one has any idea. We know the jails are too full. That we know. The only winners there are the jail guard unions. I mean, I don't mind locking up real criminals, but, you know, to lock up drug addicts is another story unless they committed a crime. I don't believe that's the right way to go. Oh, what, are we going to argue over this again? By the way, this is interesting. Drugs are a scourge in America, right? Not one discussion by any of the liberal vermin in the media. You're going to expect Wolf Blitzer to say, what would you do to stop the drug epidemic? That owl-eyed, double-talking fraud? You expect any of the talking mouths amongst Murdoch's minions to raise the question of drugs? No. You know, they're not going to, because the Murdoch minions are also connected to the movie empire that Murdoch owns, and they're not going to criticize anything related to the entertainment world, which are social issues, which is why I talked about them yesterday. I think it's very important. I'd like to know which party is better for social values. Now, we're going to assume that it's the Republicans, but that's not true. If it's Gingrich, it's not the Republicans. This guy represents retrograde, everything wrong. The guy represents the 60s, just as do, you know, the Clintonistas. So he's not good in that. Smart guy, so what? What does that mean? But then you have Romney. So you figure, okay, he's a rigid, you know, Christian fanatic Mormon, and you don't like that. What I don't like, and I'll never understand, and I really, here's a topic that intrigues me. Why do evangelicals distrust Mormons? I don't understand it to the extent that they would not even support, let's say it's Romney, and you're a Christian evangelical who listens to the show. Okay, I respect both sects of Christianity. Why would the Why would an evangelical Christian not support a fellow Christian just because he's a member of another sect? Now, I suspect as an outsider that you don't even consider Mormonism to be a division of Christianity. You suspect that it's a cult. But are you kidding that you don't think Romney's a good man and a decent man and an honorable family man? I don't understand that. Because I was speaking with someone the other day who's quite intelligent and very high up the food chain, who said the evangelicals will not vote for Romney, which is a real problem for him. But they're going to vote for Gingrich? That they'll vote for? Okay, so I'd like to hear from an evangelical on this issue, the Jan Brewer issue. The only topic I don't want to hear about is the miracle of nitrous oxide and whippets. I'm not interested, frankly. I don't want to hear about the quick flash and dizziness, the lack of coordination and slurred speech. I've seen it on the floor of the Congress, and I don't mean Korea. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go right to the callers on the Savage Nation. Albany, New York. Tom, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, hello. It's a great honor and a great pleasure.
Thanks.
And I wanted to talk about Liam Neeson, at least. You remember Cat Stevens, what he turned to Islam, what they did to him?
Yeah.
He was begging in the streets for money. He was making money. He was a musician. And then he wound up in wherever it was, in Iran or somewhere over there. And he was begging for money in the streets because he became Islamic. He was white. He was American.
Well, I don't remember that part of it. I mean, people are entitled to convert to any religion they want. But here's a question. How come they cut the head off of someone if they convert from Islam to Christianity in most of the Muslim world? How come they punish them or beat them to death?
They got Irish blood. You're not.
No, this is something I don't understand. It's okay for a Christian to convert to Islam and no one says anything. Fine, free country. But if a Muslim tries to convert to Christianity, they chase him to the end of the earth in most Muslim nations. What's to understand how anyone can embrace such fanaticism? To be very honest with you. No, all religions are not equal. I don't know about Christians chasing down anyone who leaves Christianity to become a Buddhist or a Muslim or a Jew. I don't know about Jews who track down their followers who want to leave and become Buddhists or Hindus or Muslims. I don't know of them tracking them down and trying to hurt them. There seems to be a awful lot of stories about people who try to leave Islam who are hunted down and either killed or maimed. Why is that? Don't even call me on it. It's a self-evident question. How you can't see this, I don't know. Here you have the Egyptian Islamists who took over allegedly because it was so bad in Egypt under Mubarak that now they've kidnapped an American, a group of Americans, including Transportation Secretary's son, who can't even leave the country now. This is what Obama has wrought with his so-called Arab Spring. And there's Peter Sellers in the form of Leon Panetta. Every time I see Leon Panetta, I think of Peter Sellers. Planning to cut ground forces by 100,000 troops, mainly in the U.S. Marines, because they do the job too well. Kagan Rowland healthcare case questioned. With Supreme Court case in Obama's healthcare law nearing, critics point to Elena Kagan touting the law in 2010. Of course she should be dismissed. Absolutely, but will she be? I don't know. I don't know. You need somebody who is vociferous enough to prosecute such an issue. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So we have squeaky clean Mitt Romney, and then we have the filthy, dirty Gingrich. And Gingrich says that the affairs he had make him more normal than Mitt, who only has sex with his wife. This is really not pushing the envelope. This is total insanity. That ties into the story I'm about to read to you. HPV study finds 7% of U.S. teens and adults carry the virus in their mouths. Infection with HPV, human papillomavirus, heightens the risk of developing cancer of the mouth and throat. Most cases of oral HPV trace to oral sex rather than to kissing. And what's amazing here is that the type of head and neck cancer we're talking about, oropharyngeal cancer, which is related to this virus, a type of head and neck cancer, have skyrocketed in recent years, increasing 225% between 1998 and 2004, somewhere after Bill Clinton left office, where the American public was feasted upon the lie that oral sex is not sex. The findings also indicate that the virus is not likely to spread through kissing. Most cases of oral HPV can be traced to oral sex. It's an important story, and I'm not reading it for salacious reasons. Listen to this. It's very important for you to hear this. Because the hippie 60-60 thing was, if it feels good, do it. Why not do it in the road? Act it out. It's good for your emotions. Among people who had more than 20 sexual partners, the prevalence of oral HPV was 20%. But the researchers found it in less than 1% of people who said they were virgins and in less than 4% of people who said they never had performed oral sex. Very little is known about how the virus is transmitted to the oral cavity, blah, blah, blah. So we don't have to make jokes about it. We don't have to make jokes about this. You know, this is almost common sense. This is interesting, though, the age differences amongst those with the virus. Those ages 60 to 64 had the highest prevalence at 11.4%. That's interesting. What the heck are the oldsters doing? What is that all about? Well, okay, 60 to 64, they were hippies, and okay, I get it. They worked for George McGovern. They did the marches, that's all. So they're paying the piper now. And the study also linked heavy smoking to oral infection. Well, that's clear. Smoking is poison. Thank God I only smoked when I was young, you know? I don't mean like 8 years old. When I was 17, I wanted to be cool. And I had a girlfriend, like, from Europe. She said, oh, get a cigarette. She said, it'll give you something to do with your hands. Can you imagine a thing like that? I was 19. I don't know how old I was. 18. Euro. So I started to smoke. And then I got into English ovals. I had an old broken Jaguar that always got stuck in first gear in Central Park. But as long as I had the cigarettes, my hands were stained. My lips were stained. I had the leather, the beat-up bomber jacket that Clinton wore on the deck of the war in Serbia after destroying half the country's bridges, all the bridges to the country. But cigarettes are very bad for you. But marijuana actually has more toxicants than tobacco. But don't tell that to your son as he's putting on you before he goes back to school. He's 26 years old, still on living in the bedroom because Nancy Pelosi said he can stay there until he's 26 and get Obamacare. Squamous cell cancers, which are right. I'm not pulling you. It's a serious story. It really is. Here's the thing. They're trying to push the vaccine. That's what the reason the story was put out now by the vaccine gonoffs. They're trying to push the vaccine now. And this is such horrendous garbage. They're saying that the vaccine is recommended for females ages 9 to 26 and boys from age 9 to 21. I would say in certain communities that would be true. I would say it's not true in all communities, nor should it be broad-based distributed. I would say go to the communities where there's a high prevalence of HPV and stop the big lie that everyone needs to take this drug. The same thing with many other things I've seen, which have been broadcast as affecting everyone. That's nonsense. It's utter nonsense. ADD, mark my words, ADD, ADHD, and the other, considered to be normal again, and they will not be medicated. And the medico-pharmaceutical establishment will just have to find another place to peddle their drugs. That's all. Hear, hear. Yay. In the British system, there'd be yay. And then all of those who are owned by the pharmaceutical industry would go, nay. Nay. Oh, we have a guest coming up. Oh, do I have a big guest coming right after the break? You know who we have? Beowulf. Who do we have? I forgot who I have. Jack Abramoff will be here to tell us the amazing tale of the rise and fall of an American. The man rises to the heights of K Street. Newt Gingrich, very well. Many pictures in his book with Newt and others. And then he's put in prison, and what he suffered as a white-collar criminal, which astounded me.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. In a few seconds, moments, we will have Jack Abramoff on. I read his book, Capital Punishment, which was astonishing. I figured, all right, the guy got in trouble. You wrote a book. What do I care about a lobbyist, you know? But then I looked at the pictures and I looked at the book. I could not believe it. Here is a man who has had an amazing life to this point, born in Beverly Hills, an aggressive high school football player, was a top college Republican leader, was well-known in the conservative movement alongside Ralph Reed and Grover Norquist, and winds up as one of the most successful lobbyists in American history. And then there comes the fall. It's a truly American story, capital punishment, the hard truth about Washington corruption from America's most notorious lobbyist. Joining us right now is Jack Abramoff. Jack, thank you very much for being with us on the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Dr. Savage. Thanks for having me.
Jack, I mean, come on, you've been through some ordeal. What you did certainly is not different than what many people have done and are doing now. Let's start from the top. Would you agree with that statement?
No, I think you're right. It doesn't make me less guilty, of course, but definitely that is true.
Now, when you say guilty, guilty of what?
Well, two things. One, I was guilty of crossing the line of the law, but maybe worse, I was guilty of participating in a system where too much that's corrupt and bad is legal. And so in both cases, I was guilty.
It's interesting because in reading your book, I realized that you went through a sort of revelation in jail, and you admitted to yourself that you did cross the line and you had lost any perspective of where you were at, is what you wrote. Isn't that true, more or less, in my words, rather?
Yes, it actually is true. And frankly, part of it, part of the ability for me to really rethink what I was listening to you every night in jail, as a lot of the guys did. And
oh, come on, really?
And rightfully so.
You actually listened to the Savage Nation in prison?
Absolutely. Yes, I wasn't alone.
Well, which prison were you in, Jack?
I was in a place called Cumberland Federal Correctional Institution in Maryland.
Now, this is an interesting part of the book, and this is one of the reasons that it appealed to me, is that people say, oh, he was in a white-collar prison. It was just like a university. It was a slap on the wrist. I was shocked to see how you were mistreated. And one scene in particular jumped right out of the pages. You ordered a Christian Bible, even though you yourself were an Orthodox Jew. You ordered a Christian Bible for an African inmate. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and the Bible came, you put it on a shelf in the library for him, you were then called down to the authorities who said that they were throwing you in the hole, and you said, what? And then you went to a hearing and they said, because you distributed contraband in prison, you could not believe it, and you said, the last time I heard a thing like this was in the Soviet Union. Is that a fair summary of what you wrote in that book?
That's exactly right. Yes, exactly what happened, tragically.
So how could they call a Bible contraband material?
Well, I mean, technically, anything that a prisoner gives to another prisoner becomes a contraband, but I didn't give it to him. I put it on the shelf, and that was the way that I saw it.
So that's the equivalent of giving him cigarettes, a Hershey bar, or methamphetamine as a Bible now, because there's no mind running the prison system, or were you singled out? And they were waiting for you to trip up so they could punish you even more, Jack.
I think there was a combination of both. I think that they were certainly at the beginning waiting for me to trip up, and they were trying to do everything they could to get me perhaps to trip up, and I just didn't trip up. I tried to behave as best I could. But then there's also, in the prison system, it's there's certain rules, and they're going to apply them. The problem is I saw myself many times, inmates handing each other contraband that's real contraband, cigarettes and worse. But none of them were ever put into the situation I was with a Bible.
Unbelievable. How many years did you serve in prison?
I was there for 43 months, a little over 3.5 years.
Good God. So that's pretty bad. And I watched the movie Casino Jack, which was somewhat based upon your fall from grace. Who was the actor who played you in the movie? I forgot.
Kevin Spacey.
Yeah, he's a terrific actor. I really like him as an actor. I don't like his politics, but I like his acting. And I try to bifurcate the individual's profession from his politics. But, you know, I don't think that he did a portrayal of what actually happened to you in prison, Jack.
No, didn't. I mean, the movie was written by a screenwriter in Canada who, you know, kind of took from the Washington Post. Spacey came and met me in prison with the director. Spacey tried to make it a little bit better, but as you know, when you're making a movie, once the script is set, you can't do much once you got the script.
You know, in your book, you have pictures with various politicians, including Tom DeLay, Newt Gingrich, and others. Have you heard any complaints from any of these people for you associating yourself with them after the fact?
Well, I know Newt and his people aren't very happy with what I'm saying about him. I'm not positive about him. I think that he's not worthy of running for president. But I recently wrote a column on for the WND site about it as well. But DeLay, I was in touch with since prison, is, you know, very friendly and my support for what he's enduring. That's pretty much it.
Now, you know what's interesting? There's many interesting facts in your book, Capital Punishment, and I'd like you to go into some of them, Jack. Maybe we'll take some callers after the break where they want to ask you questions. What's amazing to me is that you lobbied for many companies, and then you had very big clients in the Indian gambling industry, and that was apparently what brought you down. It was one tribe against another, wasn't it?
Yes, very much. People mistakenly think that Indians, just because they're all Indians, are all on the same team. The tribes don't view it that way any more than Germans and French view themselves as Europeans and they should never go to war.
Or that Christians think that they're all in bed together, or that Jews all think that they're on the same wavelength. I mean, we've got problems within the Orthodox Jewish community between the Satmar Hasidim and the Lubavitch, for example, that borders on warfare. So I wouldn't think it's any different than any other ethnic group or any other religious group.
Exactly.
So, you know, I mean, so you are a religious man. Did you go in as a religious man?
Yes, I've been religious since I've been 12.
So, you know, this is a difficult question for me, Jack, but if you were religious and if you truly believed in your religious beliefs and in the Torah, how could you have strayed so far from the center line?
Well, I'm a sinner. I mean, is the bottom line. I made mistakes. But worse than perhaps doing things that, you know, in our religion, there are people who make mistakes. They know they do it, and they correct it, and they get punished, et cetera. The worst problem is when your philosophy is wrong. In other words, if you're in a boat and you have a sextant that's 1 degree off, all of a sudden you having things looks good to you. And then by the time you hit the rock somewhere, you realize that you've been totally messed up, and that was the case with me.
Jack, you know, I think you got that from my show where I said 1 degree off on a compass is nothing in the near distance, but in the far distance, it can lead you right into a land, into the land. I think I was talking about Bill Clinton at the time when I talked about it on the radio. Jack, you're breaking up a little bit, so what I'm going to do is take some callers, and I'd like my staff to call you back on a better landline because I want them to hear Jack Abramoff with his new book, Capital Punishment. I want to hear what he has to say about Newt Gingrich in particular. Guys, please get Jack back on the line. I'd like to take some callers on various subjects on the Savage Nation. Before the break, I was asking you, if you are an evangelical, would you vote for Mitt Romney? It's not related to Jack Abramoff, but the fact of the matter is, it's a very important question. Stephen in New York, fire away. You're on the Savage Nation.
I would have a lot of trouble because we do not accept this Book of Mormon. It actually does not. It doesn't subscribe to any Christian beliefs. They believe that Jesus did not die on the cross. They believe he came to North America. So it's sacrilege.
Mm. But as a personality, as a man, don't you think Mitt Romney is squeaky clean?
I believe he is a decent moral fiber as much as the media will allow us to see of him. I would have a lot of I don't like Obama, so I would probably vote for almost anyone the Republicans would run over Obama. I don't think.
I wonder if that sentiment is the norm in the evangelical community of which you are a part. It's disturbing for me to believe this. Is Jack back on the line? Okay, put Jack back up. I'll let you control the callers and what. Jack, are you back?
I am.
So, Jack, do you care to make any comments about your experiences with Newt Gingrich? Because you said before the break, actually, that you don't think he's qualified to be president. I don't think you're alone in that opinion. I mean, I share it for sure. But why do you say that? You know him. I never met him.
Well, for a number of reasons. Number one, he's not somebody who seems to even be able to hold a focus. He flip-flops more than the leper father in Braveheart as to what side he's on. And I just find that he's, throughout my dealings with him, that it, one just never knew where you were. I talk in the book, in my book, Capital Punishment, I talk about a time I went in to talk about the Western Pacific U.S. territory called the Marianas and the problems mm-hmm. there. And he listened for a few minutes and then declared that, why don't we just combine them with Hawaii?
Now, oh, my God, that's absurd. As someone who lived in Hawaii, it shows he has no idea what vast distances and differences there are between the cultures of those two island groups.
Right, exactly. And to him, they were islands, and that was the solution and end of discussion. And it was emblematic, really, of how dealing with him. But from a conservative point of view, this is not a conservative. He's certainly no more conservative than Romney is. He's flip-flop all over the place. The column I recently wrote, I went through about 15 things that he's been on the bad side of, including funding abortion, including everything else. And I just think that this is not the guy who conservatives should be voting for. We should look seriously to win this election, and doing it with him, I think, would be a big mistake.
Jack Abramoff has written a book that I recommend called Capital Punishment, not just because it's an interesting story, but it's a moral tale, and it's an important moral tale. He's a man who went over the line, knew he went over the line, went to prison and had a revelation or several in prison, and is trying to tell others to, you know, kind of stay this side of the law. Jack, I know we're going to talk about this a little more, because many people think that it's a cakewalk in these white-collar prisons. And as I've already indicated, you were singled out. You were thrown in the hole for distributing a Bible to a fellow inmate. Even though you're Jewish, you bought him a Christian Bible. What is life like in a white-collar prison?
Well, first of all, there are no white-collar prisons. 10% of the inmates in the prison I was in every federal prison are white-collar guys. 90% are drug dealers. They're
wow.
people who've come down from the maximum and medium securities and through the 20-year sentence at the end of their sentences. If they haven't been violent, they'll put them in a camp because it's cheaper. But there are no white-collar prisons any longer in America, at least certainly not the one I was in.
So, okay, this is interesting. It's sort of a mixed population of ex-drug dealers and formerly violent inmates with white-collar guys. So what is, how do you survive in such an environment? I mean, you're a big, tough guy, former sports guy, but that means nothing in a prison environment.
Right, exactly. I mean, you know, where I was, first of all, with me, since I was in the news virtually every day, they were still putting me on television. I was kind of a weirdo to the inmates. I got along with everybody. I didn't mix myself into anybody's business and just tried to stay out of it. If you do that, you don't wind up getting hurt and you don't wind up getting in any trouble. But we lived six men to 150 square feet. That was the room we had. And
wow.
On top of each other all the time. And, you know, it's just very hard. It's very aggravating.
Well, especially coming from the heights that you were living in, Jack, I can imagine what that must have been like. But you've survived it and you're out. You're now writing books. You're working with World Net Daily. Are you back in business outside of those areas?
Well, I'm trying to get back into – I used to be a motion picture producer, so I'm working on a few projects in that area. And, you know, my business opportunities for an ex-felon are limited, and I'm certainly not going to go into lobbying. I've actually been offered a lot of money to go back into lobbying, but I'm not going to do it.
Isn't that something? Of course. That's like a guy who declares bankruptcy. I remember when my father was a small businessman, used to say to me, couldn't understand it. He never did it, but others in the business that he bought from would build up big debts. They would declare bankruptcy, and I'd say, well, how can they ever go back in business? He would laugh. He would say a day after they declared bankruptcy, people wanted to do business with them again. I said, what? He said they needed them, I guess. I said, same thing with you.
It's bizarre. And, you know, I had a skill set in that area, unfortunately, but it's not something I'm going to do. If anything, I'm frankly out there trying to clean up the system at this point. And it's not. Let's just say this. I'm not getting man of the year from the American League of Lobbyists this year.
Jack Abramoff will be back in a moment or a few moments here on the Savage Nation. If you have questions about his book, Capital Punishment, or about life in prison, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. I'm Michael Savage. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. We have with us Jack Abramoff, who was put behind bars for 3.5 years for crossing the line from lobbying to tax evasion, etc. His book is Capital Punishment. And by the way, the book contains hard advice about Washington corruption. And he would know about it. And he names names in it, by the way. Jack, welcome back to the program. Would you please put Jack up on the air? Because I can't press the button. It's too hard for me.
I think I'm here. Yes.
Jack, let me ask you something. I want to have you back on the show next week. I hope you have the time, because I think your book is fascinating. You mentioned at the outset that many prisoners, you yourself included, listen to the Savage Nation in prison. Why did they seek the show out? What did they listen for?
For you. I mean, you not only present the news and issues in a clear way, you're fearless, you're entertaining. It's an exciting show. I mean, the inmates really listen to a lot of talk radio because they don't have a lot to do at night, assuming they don't want to go and watch TV in the TV room, which is usually the most dangerous place in a prison. a lot of the guys listen to I remember you were on from, I think, 10 at night till 1 in the morning for us, where we were the station we could pick up.
Uh-huh. Because now I'm on in the air. You were in Cumberland, Maryland. This is now in the Washington, D.C. area on TNT, in the Washington, D.C. area. I was just curious what it is about the shows in particular. But I guess it's just the idea that there's ideas on talk radio which don't exist in mainstream media, and there's no discussion. And it sort of passes the time because you feel like you have a friend in the prison cell with you, someone that's talking to you directly, I suppose. That would be that. Jack, what advice would you have? I like to preface this on such little time. I had a guest on years ago, 10 years ago, when I was a local host, who was once a big mortgage broker here in the Bay Area. He went to prison for years. He went to San Quentin. And I had him on the show, and I said, how did you survive in San Quentin as a lily white guy in his 50s? And he said, I'll tell you how. He said, the toughest guys came over to me, and they said, we want you to be our legal advisor. And he said, I became a legal advisor, and they protected me. Did that go on where you were?
No, not really. They asked me if I would be their lobbyist, and no, I'm kidding.
Oh, come on. That's a joke, isn't it?
Yeah, I did help. You know, when I got there, I taught typing to the guys. I taught speech. You know, the capacities, they didn't have a lot of education. And so you try to do what you can to help. There wasn't open violence where I was. There was violence, but it wasn't open. And, you know, the guys tried to get along. Everybody tried to get along. And again, if you didn't act like a jerk and you didn't get in their business, you usually didn't have a problem.
Interesting. Well, you see, there's so much we don't know about that other side of the life. What movies have you produced, by the way? You said you were a film producer. What did you produce, Jack?
I produced Red Scorpion, starring Dolph Lundgren, which was an
action. Oh, that was a fun movie. I remember that movie years ago.
Yeah, back in the 80s. I produced Red Scorpion 2, Spear of Destiny, The Karate Masters. You know, forgettable but fun action.
No, they were fun movies. By the way, do people in Hollywood take your calls?
Sure. Sure. I think Hollywood's got a fascination both with politics and with criminals.
Well, wait a minute. Then you and I have a match made in heaven, because you should be promoting the Michael Savage story. We should do a movie together.
That sounds great.
I don't know. I think I'm more persona non grata in Hollywood than you are, Jack.
Not persona non grata everywhere. You're number one. So.
Capital Punishment, The Hard Truth About Washington Corruption from America's Most Notorious Lobbyist, Jack Abramoff. We've just scratched the surface. What's most fascinating is the Indian lobbying and the vying for power and the vying for more casinos and what you did for them and how that brought you down. Next week on The Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
questions for today include, why don't any of the Republican candidates for president talk about marriage and family values? Who or what do you think they're afraid of in talking about family and family values? Well, it's a lot about the Arizona Governor Jan Brewer, who confronted Obama when he landed at an airport in Arizona this week, shouting at him and sticking her finger in his face. he didn't like that at all. They say he's very thin-skinned, and he didn't like what she said about him in his book. Uh-oh, I better not go to Arizona. Would you consider voting for Jan Brewer for vice president when Romney wins the primary? George Soros, the hedge fund manipulator, claims there is no real difference between Romney and Obama. Are you kidding? Do you agree or disagree? Obama's former faith advisor, whoever that is, says he's happy that American civil religion is dying. What? Do you think America's better off or worse off because of the decline of religion in America? I know what I think. In the sound area today, George Soros, the hedge fund manipulator, says he's one of Lenin's useful idiots and there is no difference between Romney and Obama. He couldn't be further from the truth.
If it's between Obama and Romney, there isn't all that much difference, except for the crowd that they bring with them. Romney would have to take Gingrich or Santorum as a vice president and probably have some pretty extreme candidates for the Supreme Court. So that's the downside.
But isn't there actually quite a big difference between even a President Obama and a President Romney when it comes to questions of taxation?
That is the big difference, and that has led my hedge fund community abandon Obama in favor of any Republican because they don't like to be taxed.
Are you one of Lenin's useful idiots in the view of your fellow hedge fund billionaires to be making this kind of argument?
Well, I suppose so. I'm a traitor to my class.
Newt Gingrich badmouths Ronald Reagan in 1988 while claiming he has inherited Reagan's mantle in 2012.
The years of 1980-1984 are the past, and the American people are a people peculiarly addicted to the future. If George Bush runs as a continuation of Reaganism, I think he'll lose.
Gingrich holds rally along Florida's Space Coast, talks about going back to the moon. You know, there's an idea. He could run on the moon.
Twice recently, Governor Romney has made fun of me for having bold ideas in space. He actually didn't catch the weirdest thing I've ever done. I'm going to tell you all, because sooner or later his researchers will find it. At one point early in my career, I introduced the Northwest Ordinance for space. And I said, when we got, I think the number is 13,000. When we have 13,000 Americans living on the moon, they can petition to become a state. By the end of my second term, we will have the first permanent base on the moon, and it will be American.
Newt Gingrich on the campaign trail in Florida on Fidel Castro, Obama, and Freddie Mac. Gingrich says Romney's attacking out of desperation. Nonsense. Romney on Pelosi threatening Gingrich with an ethics report. Romney slams Gingrich on a debate behavior. Crazy, isn't it? Senator Upchuck Schumer, Democrat socialist from New York in the State of the Union, says we're in great shape. I guess he hasn't gotten out of Sheep's Head Bay in a while. Univision's spokesmouth says to Gingrich, how did your affair differ from Clinton's?
I take full responsibility for these questions. When you were Speaker of the House, you criticized President Clinton for having an extramarital affair.
No, I criticized President Clinton for lying under oath in front of a federal judge, committing perjury, which is a felony for which normal people go to jail.
However, at the same time, you were doing exactly the same thing.
But I wasn't. I just pointed out you didn't hear my answer. I've been through two divorces.
Many people think that's hypocritical.
That's right, because they listen to your question and they don't listen to the facts. The fact is I've been through two divorces. I've been deposed both times under oath. Both times I told the truth in the deposition because I know that it is. I'm not a lawyer. So I know it's a felony. Bill Clinton, who is a lawyer, he's a Yale graduate, law school graduate. He knew he was lying under oath. He knew it was perjury. He knew it was a felony. And in fact, he lost his license to practice law in Arkansas as part of the deal.
Now let's go to michaelsavage.com. Top left, 36 Obama aides owe $833,000 in back taxes. Obama's theme so far has been that every single American, no matter how rich, should pay their fair share of taxes. And some are saying that they should begin with Obama's staff. Soros admits he's one of Lenin's useful idiots. The Prime Minister of Australia had to be dragged to safety as a result of Aboriginal protesters trying to get her. Take a look at the YouTube. Map makers falsely showed Greenland turning green to provide proof of global warming. Map maker, map maker, map maker. Arizona governor stands up to patronizing Obama. Pelosi's office backtracked and says she doesn't have any dirt on Newt. I wonder if he has any dirt on Nancy. That could be why she suddenly has no dirt on Newt. Gingrich opens door for illegal aliens becoming citizens, trying to curry favor with Florida's Hispanic voters. What else is in the news? Islamic flag over the White House. Radical Muslims want America ruled by Sharia. How come we don't hear any of this in the campaign? Google will know more about you than your partner. No kidding. Illiberal hate squads are attacking a Connecticut mayor for saying tacos. Tax evaders are renouncing U.S. citizenship, not coming back to America. Obama set to accelerate aid to Egypt. They're going to send money to the haters who want to destroy us. Terrific. Talk about jihad. What else is on michaelsavage.com? There's a picture of a cannibal who was arrested in Florida. He allegedly hacked to death a Connecticut man, ate the victim's eye and part of his brain. Could be a cultural defense. A Nantucket boat, missing since 08, was found drifting off Spain 4 years later. Can you believe this? How about fried food? Well, apparently fried food heart risk is a myth, according to new research. It's the type of oil that is used that really matters. So eat your grease as long as it's with fresh olive or sunflower oil. It's the deep-fried old oil that you have to be aware of. You understand that? I hope. How about what else is in the news? Defense Secretary, well, I should say Anti-Defense Secretary Panetta, unveils a plan that would cut nearly $500 billion from the defense budget and shrinking the U.S. ground forces by about 100,000. Let's pray we never have to go to war again, which is kind of unlikely. U.S. urges Egypt to lift travel ban on Americans. Sure. Biden catches himself imitating an Indian accent, describing call centers before quickly switching back. Photos detail evacuation of wrecked cruise ship. What else did we miss in the news today? Is there anything else that's exciting for the endless needs of the savage nation? Obama says he's going to use executive orders to raise taxes on the wealthy. Gee, and I thought it was a representative democracy. Not until Junior Doc came along. Egypt bans Americans from leaving. Who would want to stay? Well, anyway, now Dole attacks Newt. Where'd he come from? They came back from China? Bob Dole came back from China to attack Newt? Bob Dole, a Mitt Romney supporter and former Republican presidential candidate, issued a scathing statement Thursday blasting Newt Gingrich for being a one-man band who rarely took advice. In an open letter to conservatives distributed by Romney's campaign, Dole said he personally took steps to assist the former House Speaker pay off a penalty levied by the House Ethics Committee. So there it is. Dole took time out from lobbying for China, look at that, to attack a lobbyist who's now running for president. Isn't that interesting, Bale? Dole took time out from being a lobbyist for China to attack the former lobbyist Newt Gingrich who wants to be president. Oh, boy. This is amazing. It's like the kettle calling the pot black. It's like the pothead calling the, well, whatever.
There you go.
What else is in the news? Wow. It's all terrible. It's all terrible. Report came in, 30-pound delivery of cocaine sent to the United Nations. Iran to execute bloggers for spreading corruption. Sounds like they're using executive orders. Florida poll, Romney stronger than Gingrich in general election versus Obama. Liberal groups plan Florida assault on Romney. All right, well, all this and more on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
if it's between Obama and Romney, there isn't all that much difference, except for the crowd that they bring with them. Romney would have to take Gingrich or Santorum as a vice president and probably have some pretty extreme candidates for the Supreme Court. So that's the downside.
Wow, you know how much that irritates me. Well, imagine how your throat will get this winter without Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops. That's right. I'm talking about Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops we all grew up with. They're back in natural honey and wild cherry flavors. Pine Brothers has been a trusted brand since 1870. Visit them on the web at pinebrothers.com. That's pinebrothersyum.com. I think I'm one of the few Renaissance men left in America. Because when I grew up, that was considered so cool. I don't even like the word cool. I never used the word cool. I hate it from the day it originated. I was in the hip age where you used the word hip. And if you didn't say hip, you weren't hip, right? He's hip. But then that became, right, not cool. So the next thing comes along, other words like cool. But I didn't like it because it was being used in you know what I'm saying? But you do know what I'm saying. But you don't have to use the word like hip or cool to understand when something is there. Either it's there or it's not there. But when I was young, when I was coming up, a Renaissance man was considered the thing to be. It was the mark of a diverse individual in the true sense of diversity of spirit, diversity of mind. Whoever even talks about the word Renaissance man anymore? You say Renaissance man, you think of some freak who wears like velvet costumes at a Shakespearean play. We don't mean that when we say Renaissance man. But the vernacular of America has been so warped as a result of the limits of education and rap music, I guess television as well, that people don't even know what you mean in half the phrases I use. And I'm not the most big word user on the planet. In fact, I seek to avoid big words. Trust me, I can use them when I need to. I can use Latin words if I needed to, but I don't. Because I don't need to show off how smart I am with big words. There's a guy in radio, an old guy. He has no education. I don't hold that against him because I know a lot of bright people who never went to college. This guy never went to college, so he's defensive about it. So what does he do as a talk show host? He uses very big words as often as possible to show how literate he is. But it doesn't work. You got to speak the common parlance of the average man, you know, the street language, because you can get great ideas across with a very basic vocabulary. Am I right or wrong? I think so. I don't need to throw in, you know, PhD words to make you understand that I know them. There's no need for them. I mean, what do you need them for? They're used when they, by the way, you know, it's interesting. Language is very interesting, incidentally. I could get into a little discussion of language right now because it's an interesting topic. What is language? We all use it. Don't we all use language? Everyone out there uses language from the lowest to the highest, from people with a 200-word vocabulary to people with a 40,000-word vocabulary. In all of the languages on the earth, everyone is using a language. A dog barks, that's his language. A bird chirps, that's her language, correct? A pachyderm, whatever it does, is using pachyderm language. They're all communicating. So we're talking about communication. Now, this is an intriguing concept because there once was a phrase that said to the Hebrew, the word is the deed. I don't know who wrote that. In fact, if anyone out there is super literate, can you look up that phrase? There must be a book on this. I had an old friend that once wrote that to me because he was a printer and a print fanatic. And he was a Jewish guy, and he said, to the Hebrew, the word is the deed. Okay? The word is the deed. Now, look how far we have come from that phrase of to the Hebrew, the word is the deed, to the age of Obama, where no words have any meaning whatsoever. It's all, the word I'm seeking is quite interesting. Aristotle had a whole school in Greece. There were whole schools of people who were taught how to speak eloquently and say nothing. So they were the predecessors of today's political class. Young men from aristocratic families in ancient Greece were sent to schools where they were taught to be sophists. And you've heard the phrase sophistry, right? Obama is the epitome of sophistry. And that's putting it in a classy way. In other words, he's all style and no substance whatsoever. Okay, so there's a word. So now let's do something together for having fun together, okay? I have a book in my hand called The Concise Etymological Dictionary of the English Language by Skeet. I love this book, right? But no one even knows about it. It's one of my prized possessions. Why? Because if you look up a word, It shows you where it originates from. And I say, well, who cares about that? Well, I kind of want to know where it came from. So here it is. You ready for this? Sophist. It has the complete different reason, meaning that I just told you. Sophist, a captious reasoner, not a cautious reasoner, a captious reasoner, okay, is what it means. Then they show the Latin and the Greek. A skillful man, also a sophist, teacher of arts for money, interesting, to instruct, sophistry. But that's related to the word sophisticate or sophisticated, right? So when you say someone is sophisticated, what are you saying about them? They put on airs and that they're basically insincere people when you say that they're sophisticated, as opposed to a guy who dresses down, speaks the plain language, is an ordinary man. That's opposite to sophisticated, and the man is not a sophist in that regard. I'm just getting off the track a little bit because I want to, because it's fun. And I can, and I'm supposed to once in a while. And I think it's beautiful that we have achieved this together. People of the Savage Nation, thank you very much.
Savage.
Twice recently, Governor Romney has made fun of me for having bold ideas in space. He actually didn't catch the weirdest thing I've ever done, I'm going to tell you all, because sooner or later his researchers will find it. At one point early in my career, I introduced the Northwest Ordinance for space. And I said, I think the number is 13,000. When we have 13,000 Americans living on the moon, they can petition to become a state. By the end of my second term, we will have the first permanent base on the moon, and it will be American.
So Romney, Gingrich, and the rest of the GOP candidates are in the midst of the last debate before Tuesday's primary in Florida, further destroying their chances at defeating Barack Obama. Joining us right now in the Savage Nation to give us his take on the GOP field and all things politics is the king of Newsmax media, Christopher Ruddy. King Ruddy, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, always great to be on with you.
So give us your thinking on this GOP field. I know you're a big backer of Gingrich.
Well, I think we have a very clear choice. It's coming down now to two candidates, Newt Gingrich and Mitt Romney. And I think conservatives are seeing that. It's funny, it's happening here in Florida, Michael, where we had a race in 2010 where Charlie Crist was the moderate Republican and liked embracing Democrats, even embraced Barack Obama on stage, and we had Marco Rubio. And it's very interesting that Mitt Romney's full campaign staff, his leading managers on his campaign staff, were the same managers that ran Charlie Crist's 2010 Senate campaign.
How important is the Florida primary?
The Florida primary is extremely important for Mitt Romney, because if Mitt Romney does not win here, he will probably lose the nomination. Newt, it's good if Newt wins, but remember, the conservative vote and base vote, which is about 70% of the Republican Party, the Tea Party vote, they want anyone but Mitt Romney, and they keep on consistently seeing that. So if Newt comes out of this strong and Santorum drops out of the race and Ron Paul recedes in influence, I think you could see Newt start winning additional primaries with more than 50% of the vote.
Well, what did you think of President Obama's State of the Union address?
Well, I think Obama keeps playing the same card he's always been playing, which is this class warfare. He's going to, and it was really a prelude to the presidential race, what he's doing here, it's his kickoff of his campaign. He's saying, I'm going to protect you from those evil Republicans who want to cut your benefits, cut your entitlements. You need me to protect you from these Republicans. And I think we're going to have a choice in November what direction we want America to go. Do we want it to go in a direction where we become more like a European socialist state, Michael? More like California in many ways, which has gone beyond the tipping point with so many people on entitlements, so many of the public unions controlling the state. or do we want a more free enterprise approach? And I think, I hope, I pray that Americans will choose the right course.
To beat Obama in November, what do any of these candidates have to do?
Well, I think it's very clear we first find out who these candidates are. I'm not sure who Mitt Romney is right now. You know, Mitt Romney's biggest achievement was putting through RomneyCare, which was the largest socialist healthcare system ever devised for any state in the United States. And Barack Obama has said it was his model for Obamacare. Newt Gingrich, in my mind, has had a very consistent record. And I have an idea of what Newt will do if he becomes president and what he'll do to beat Obama, which is remind people that in the 90s, he worked with Bill Clinton to push through a conservative Reaganite agenda. They lowered taxes, restrained spending, abolished welfare, created 11 million jobs, and created the biggest economic boom in American history. Newt was there. He was one of the key players. So I'm confident that if Newt reminds people, the American people, of this come November, he'll win, and he can bring a very transformational change that's a positive one for this country.
Okay, Chris, do you think these debates are helping or, as I think, hurting the GOP candidates?
Well, I know people think it's ridiculous. I actually think it's been good because there's only been one candidate that has all the money, and he's backed by all of the big, you know, Goldman Sachs, which got all of the big bailout money, all the top banks, which got all the big bailout money. They backed Barack Obama in the last election. Guess who they're backing in this primary? Mitt Romney. And Goldman Sachs is his number two contributor. They've poured in millions of dollars into his campaign. And I believe that that has an effect where he can control and be the front runner for so many months, where these other candidates that are true conservatives don't have money. The debates have leveled the playing field and allowed Newt to advocate a case where conservatives have come to him, flocked to him, even though he didn't have a lot of money.
Do you think that because of the upcoming election, Obama is pretending to move toward the center?
It's pretty clear to me, Michael, that Obama has not moved to the center. He is going to stop Obama. If he wanted to move to the center, he would have agreed to the pipeline, which brought jobs, natural gas, lowered Americans dependent on foreign oil. He didn't want the pipeline deal. He is playing to his leftist base. He wants to energize them. And he thinks that there's more people now on the dole or receiving entitlements or receiving government checks than those who are not. And it's a class warfare battle. So, no, I don't perceive that he's going to move to the center, because when you move to the center, you usually do it with tangible acts. And so far, he has been unwilling to compromise.
Christopher Ruddy, thanks for joining us today on the Savage Nation.
Michael, really great talking to you at this very important time for our country, and I urge people to get more the full story about what's going on in Florida in the Republican primary by going to Newsmax.com. We're also conducting a very urgent national poll that everyone can vote in as to who they want for president in this primary.
With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.
Lifestyle coach Dr. Savage right now. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. It was one call I wanted to get with the guy with the – where's the one? Did he go? Oh, here it is, Chicago, Eddie. Eddie, you got a great question. What is it?
Yes, Dr. Savage. I would like to know if there is a certain diet that I can eat that would help my odds as to having a boy child instead of a girl child. I have two girls right now. And I was curious.
Very interesting. Well, I cannot find any evidence in the literature that you can eat certain foods or take certain vitamins to change the balance with regard to the sex of a child. However, there is medical literature on nutritional factors in fertility, to improve fertility, how to improve semen counts via certain vitamins. Would you like me to talk about how to improve semen counts with certain vitamins?
Well, right now we are I guess you could say we're practicing right now because of my.
Well, that's what isn't that what the honeymoon's all about? Is practice.
We have a 7-month-old right now, and we're trying to space our children out in between 3 and 4 years. Like our oldest daughter is 4 years old, and then I have a 7-month-old.
So, all right. So your issue is not fertility per se. Your issue is you want to make sure, or you want to tilt the odds in favor of a male child, right?
Correct.
I do not have an answer for that question. However, folks listening to the show, Healing Children Naturally, there are 3 pages on food for fertility. Diet to improve fertility outlined, and semen counts improve via vitamins. And I base it upon older literature. In other words, I went back to the 1920s when many of the older doctors were still using foods and diets, and I found things that I thought were worth talking about. You may say, well, oh, that's out of date, man. That's not a drug. That's not medicine. Well, that's exactly the point. It's not a drug, and it's not medicine. It's called how it was done through the ages. And so... back in 1928, a Dr. McCumber suggested the following to improve fertility. Be certain your protein intake is adequate. Be certain you're consuming adequate levels of calcium, phosphorus, iodine, iron, and other trace minerals. Your water intake must be adequate. Your total calorie should be at least the level of the RDA. Now, these are very basic concepts for fertility. But what if you're a man and you want to improve your semen count because you've been told that you have a low sperm count? Can you do it with diet? There is literature that suggests yes, you can, and that's on pages 6 and 7 of Healing Children Naturally, available only on my website. Sperm production is improved both qualitatively and quantitatively by supplementation with the B vitamins and vitamin E. It's been found that with the use of as little as 150 to 200 milligrams a day of vitamin E, not only was the sperm count increased in men who had problems with sperm production, but also there was an improvement in sperm motility and a reduction in the number of abnormal sperm. More can be read in the book, and I don't want to, you know, get too technical, but it's pretty clear what we're talking about. And I think it's very important that people understand there's a lot of information out there that isn't getting out to you. Now let's go on to questions other than nutrition on the Savage Nation. Some of them I can answer. Some of them I really cannot answer. Truthfully, there are questions I can't even take. New York, WOR, Dave, what's your lifestyle question?
Yes, Michael, I'm a business school professor, and I'm going to be teaching an interesting class this fall called Career and Life Planning. And I was curious as to what kinds of, based on your experience, what kind of questions would you pose to the students to get them thinking about their lives and their careers and so on and so forth? I want to get
Wow. So you're a business professor?
That's correct, yes.
And you want to know what questions you would ask. How old are the students?
They'll be MBA students.
Oh, MBA students. And you want to provoke what in them? I'm not quite sure what you're asking.
Well, I want to provoke in them some thought around what I consider life's biggest questions. Who am I? How am I going to measure my life? And so on. I was just curious as to what...
Oh, so you're not just sticking to the business side. You want to turn them into well-rounded individuals as well, correct?
You got it.
Well, that's quite a challenge. I mean, any young person who's going to get an MBA is usually coming into that program from somewhere else, and they're anxious to make money, they're anxious to make more money, and they're anxious to make money, period. I don't know how you're going to reach them on any other level. Do you really think they're going to be interested in the bigger issues?
Well, I think so. I mean, it's going to be a requirement for the course. So they're going to sign up with that understanding.
All right, so you want to bring the ethical side as well, don't you? Isn't that what you're implying? You want them to be ethical business people?
I want them to be ethical. I want them to be well-rounded.
I'll tell you what I would do if I were you and I really wanted to challenge them. I would create 2 or 3 scenarios of a business situation where a lot of money could be made. But I'd write it out. A lot of money can be made on the sale of a railroad. Let's say I'm picking something out of the blue, a railroad tracks going. However, if this railroad goes through this area, it wipes out 55 units of housing that the poor live in. And ask them how they would deal with that problem. I mean, you know what I'm saying? You're putting them in a quandary right there. You're challenging their liberalism against their commercial interests. And it's interesting what their answers would be. But I think that would provoke answers, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I certainly think so. I just want them to think beyond the moment, think long-term what their life is going to look like.
Well, there you go. So, in other words, it's people, not profits, or is it people and profits, and where is that line drawn?
Yep, that's exactly right. Plus a little.
So I would give them the conflicting question that you could probably easily come up with, because there are so many examples of a good chance to make money that has some social implications that might be quite negative on certain populations, and present them with that conflict and have them answer it. How would they act? Now, I would even raise the stakes on them and say, and it's your first position in a major corporation and you've been given the job of dealing with the people who are affected. How would you deal with it? Or would you leave the company? Really put them on the spot.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that very
right?
much. Thank you so much.
See, thank you. I don't know if it helps at all. I mean, I left a scholarship in my first year in graduate school, and I didn't have a dime because the professor said you have to kill the lab rats, and I wouldn't do it. I told you the story. And it's a strange story because I said I'm not going to kill the mice or the rats, whatever they were using. I didn't want to hold them in my hand, stroke them, talk to them, and stick a blade in the back of their head. I didn't want to kill, lab mice. So the SOB fired me. He knew I didn't have a dime. I had nothing. I was in a strange state. It was my $300 a month stipend. I had nothing, nowhere to go. I quit. Well, he fired me, whatever. I went and left and went into another field where I didn't have to kill animals, called botany, and that led me to ethnobotany. That led me to all the islands of the South Seas, and that led me to a very interesting road in my life. In a strange way, you could say it led to radio. I don't know how you can say that, but there was a linkage somehow. It's all part of my fate. Let's put it to you that way. But in other words, hey, if you would say, well, I can't leave the job, I got to kill the mice or I'll lose the money. I walked out on many, I'd say there are other cases, and I can't tell them on the air because of legal reasons. I once worked for a corporation, and I couldn't take it anymore. The person that I was reporting to was a monster. Actually, the person I was reporting to was a very nice guy, the CEO. But then they offered me another position to stay in this out-of-state position, and they gave me a very good salary. They gave me shares in the company that were worth about $500,000. The problem was, the minute I signed on to stay on, the CEO's son, who was 22 years old, became my immediate boss, my supervisor. And he was an SOB. I was a grown man, and he wanted to show me how smart he was, even though he was quite shallow. And he started to present things to me that first day. You got to do this. You got to do that. You're going to report to me. You're going to do that. I walked into the CEO's office a day after I had accepted the position. And I said, unfortunately, I have to leave the company. He said, but Michael, you just negotiated $500,000 in stock option. Now, I got to tell you, this was 20 years ago. $500,000 was still a lot of money 20 years ago, especially since I had almost nothing at the time. I said, no amount of money is worth working for this child. I'm leaving. And I left. And I came back to California without really anything to fall back upon. And shortly thereafter, I sent out 500 tapes to 500 radio stations with a mocked up tape about a talk show called The Savage Nation. And that led to the career I have today. What I'm saying to you is that if you really have faith in yourself, something good is going to pop up. You don't have to sit there and take it from people who are monsters, who you hate, who are out to hurt you. Believe me, there's always something better. Okay, so now we'll move on, okay? Wisconsin, Max, welcome to the program. What's your question?
Yeah, Dr. Savage, I just got a little situation here. My parents, after 23 years of marriage, are getting a divorce. My dad is kind of initiating it. It's for financial reasons, and my mom and my two younger brothers are very shook up about it. I'm a 20-year-old kid. I go to college in Minnesota. I got a little, just a little situation just because I don't know whether I should stay home and, stay supportive of my family there. I'm home for the summer right now, but...
If you stay home, who would you be home with if your folks are getting divorced?
Well, I'd be with my mom. I'd be with my two younger brothers who are both, just getting into high school right now.
All right, so your father's left your mother in essence?
Right, yeah.
Did he leave her for another woman?
We don't know, really. We know that he says it's for financial reasons. My mom got in a little bit of credit card debt a while ago.
Well, your mother's going to be in a lot of emotional trauma. So as the you're the eldest son?
Yes, yes.
And what would you do in the alternative if you didn't stay home this summer? What would you be doing?
I'd be going back to school, you know, to finish up my junior year of college in Minnesota there. So,
well, wait a minute. You cannot leave college. The family is very important, but if you derail your college education as the new head of the family, in essence, you're actually doing your family a disservice. So for their sake, you have to finish your degree.
Right, and that's what they keep telling me. You know, it just feels, I feel really guilty just because, you know, my mom is going through a ton of just, like, emotional pain.
How far away will you be from your mother?
Like 4.5 hours.
Okay, so you're in the same state?
No, I'm in a different state.
But you can't stay home and hold your mother's hand. It's going to wreck both of you. What you make of yourself is going to have an influence upon your mother and your brothers in the short and the long term. You've got to be a role model for them and show that life must go on.
Savage.